Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to immerse yourselves in the American Immersion Theater Podcast with your hosts, Scott Crampton and Anessa Johnson.
Greetings, Immersioneers. I'm Scott, the Maverick of Immersion Crampton, and this is my co-host.
I'm Anessa, Experiential Theater Fairy Godmother Johnson, and welcome to the next episode of the American Immersion Theater Podcast.
All right, so we have another special episode here.
It's time for some special guests. They're like your hosts, only they're not terrible. Terrible like Scott and Anessa.
We're going to be talking just to actors in particular. So it's going to be actors trying to find work either through us or through any means. And then acting tips for our shows are the two main topics we're covering. But we're going to start out with auditions. And one reason we're doing auditions is we have somebody with a large amount of experience here in the audition market, somebody who does it, who runs them professionally, has been paid to run them professionally, Mr. Adam Mack. Yay!
Thank you.
Adam, just real quick, before we introduce Justin, tell us a little bit about your experience with auditions and stuff like that.
Sure. Well, as an actor, I'd auditioned for a ton of things, whether it was stage or screen, and then screen, whether it was feature, short, TV, commercial, what have you. So I had a lot of experience on that side of the table. But then when I was finishing college, I got an opportunity to intern at a professional casting agency in Chicago. I worked there for a few months, which translated into my own job as casting director of several independent feature films, all of which actually ended up going to film festivals and winning awards. So it was pretty exciting. And some of the people that I've worked with in those projects have gone on to do big things. One guy was on a recent season of Westworld, actually. So.
Oh, that's very, very cool.
Yeah, so I've cast an audition.
One of the dead hookers or one of the live hookers?
He was one of the robots. But but yeah, basically, I got to oversee hundreds, if not thousands, of auditions over the years. So I've seen a lot.
And then we're going to be doing acting tips. They are a little bit, they're going to be immersion-specific acting tips. And for that, we have a very special guest, Mr. Justin Issa. Yay! Now, Justin, why don't you tell us a little bit of your experience in the immersion theater world?
Sure. I've been the director of the Chicago Troupe for coming on 10 years. And in that time, we've held an audition almost every year. So each time we do that, I've seen about 200 actors and, whittled that down to about 30 to 40 each year. And that's how we build our troupe.
And now why don't you tell people what I ask you to tell them about, which is your experience in immersion theater acting.
Oh, well, I being the director has not stopped me from, being a part of the shows. I think of myself more as an actor sometimes than I do the director, and I do a lot of our shows, big ones, small ones, as for American Immersion Theater. Mm-hmm. I did play the Easter Bunny once for us.
You made
my son cry.
Yes, I terrified children. I'll be making my return this year, which was to my delight. And we used to do some Santa shows back in the day, so I was also Santa when we were in the Santa game. We're out of the Santa game now.
We don't do that.
No more Santa.
Yeah, but
that's all right. We've still got Santa suits galore, so if any of you want a Santa event, we will bring it to you.
I mean, I don't think there's any argument anymore. Like, I did every single show for, a decade, but you've done a tremendous amount of shows, and you've kept going, because I don't get to do shows much anymore. I'll outside of military tours, I'll probably do three or four. With military tours, I'm probably doing probably like 20 a year tops. Mm-hmm. And you're doing three a week.
So yeah. No, I started about 150 a year ish. For one, I like to eat. I live an expensive lifestyle and I enjoy it. I always tell people I wouldn't do it if I didn't really still enjoy it as much as I do.
All right. So let's talk about auditions. To start this up, I think, honestly, we'll all throw in our two cents here, but Adam's the expert here. So you're getting, like, a very behind the scenes, behind the curtain, so to speak. I've been fortunate enough to run auditions with Adam quite a few times, and he really is truly an expert of this and of what people look for. And he's even clever enough to figure out, I remember always going back and like, who is that? And he always finds a way. He's like, I know this this is this person. And like, he always has a way of finding, like, because that's a big thing. When you see like 100 people, you're like, oh, I really like number 30. And he's like, oh, Jeanette Harris from Eastburg. And I'm like, how did you do that?
Yeah, it's got to be organized.
And I couldn't even, if like, you, there's like two people in the lineup, I'd have no more than a 50-50 chance of getting Jeanette Harris right. So, why don't you start us off, Adam?
Sure. Well, you know, the first thing I want to say, I know that for actors, auditions at some level are always terrifying. I mean, there are those among us who have a true gift and they have no fear and they just go into any situation knowing they'll crush it and feeling great and that's nice for them. But a majority of all of the actors in the world, struggle with confidence and they need to know that as scary as it can be coming into that room and seeing these people sitting on the other side of the table from them, quietly judging them, that they actually want the best.
Occasionally loudly judging.
There are some jerks. Yes, there are some jerks in the business. Next. Some people who haven't had lunch yet and are hungry, but
I can't think of a single bad casting director story to come out of Hollywood.
No, not ever.
It's interesting that you mentioned that there's jerks, but I can't think of any.
No names. But the casting director wants you to be awesome. They want you to come in the door and solve their problem, which is they need someone awesome for this part. Mm-hmm. And if you can come in and make them look awesome by being awesome yourself, then everybody wins. So you just need to have the confidence in what it is you do and do it and just come in and do it. And where that plays into is the whole concept of the business of you. A key component about breaking into this industry that is not taught is the business of it and is how to market yourself and how to get into the industry. It's a well-kept secret. And most universities you go to learn theater aren't going to teach it because most of those professors don't know it themselves. That's why they're teaching there and not doing it.
Yeah, the well-kept secret part, I mean, it's hard to think of any well-kept secrets anymore because there's endless books, there's endless YouTube stuff, there's podcasts, there's everything. But the frank truth is if you're in college right now, they're just not teaching it to you.
Right.
And that's the hardest part. That's the biggest part. Like acting is wildly secondary to your true job of auditioning.
Sure. And this is slightly off tangent, but goes in line with the idea of what they're actually teaching you. When you're in college studying theater, if you do a play, you rehearse it for a month and run it for a weekend. Mm-hmm. In the real world, you rehearse it for 2 weeks and run it endlessly, hopefully. It's backwards. And it's not to say that there's no value in collegiate theater instruction. It's just not that it's not the ultimate in teaching how to do this and how to get into this industry. That said, as I mentioned when you introduced me, one of the first things I did was I interned at a casting agency. I would recommend that to any actor who can possibly do it. If you live in a city that's big enough to have casting agencies, intern there. Spend a couple months there and do it. You will see so many auditions. You will see so many headshots, which I'll get you to in a second. It'll teach you what the business is. It will teach you how it works better than any class can ever show you. If you're fortunate or unfortunate enough to be in the room with just the clients in between auditions, you'll hear some awful, horrible things that will give you insight into what they're actually looking for. Things I heard myself were, what did you think about actress X? Oh, she was great, but she looks just like my ex-wife. Oh, well, forget her then.
Now, and that's hard. As an actress, Anessa, mm-hmm. How do you go about not looking like somebody's ex-wife?
I just try to Facebook stalk them and figure out what their ex looks like, and then I wear a really good disguise.
That's good.
Yeah, that's good. Spirit gum remover and like 20 different varieties of fake mustaches at all times, and you will almost never look like the ex-wife.
That's true. So if you're a young ingenue female and you're interested in acting, The recommendation here is fake mustache.
Fake mustache.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll get you far.
But still, there's just so much that's out of your control. And what you have to focus on first is what is in your control, and work on that. So know that as an actor, your job is to sell you the product. You know, what do you bring to the table? So that means you need to have a frank assessment of what your capabilities are. And that's not just what's your vocal range or what type of characters can you play within your talent, but your look. I had a great teacher in college who actually was the Chicago casting agent for ER. She cast the movie Rudy, a ton of other pictures, and really knew the business. And something that she taught us that really stuck with me is that your look gets you the audition, your talent gets you the callback, but your look gets you the booking. So two of those three things you can't really change very much. Mm-hmm. It's not entirely up to you. So you can just focus on what you can. So
for example, like Justin, when he goes to audition, he'd be good for something like, you know, like Bat Boy, right? Like the one that escapes from different things. It's on the World Weekly News.
And I mean,
stuff.
I hope. I mean, yeah.
That's a good look for you. You have pointy ears, crazy big eyes and stuff. Yeah.
Pointed ears.
The pointed ears. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, show your strengths. You know, you need to look at ways to match what you do with what is being cast. So, you know, if you're auditioning for a play, say, and there's a role that interests you, think about that. You know, don't necessarily just come in with your best stock monologue, but instead think about what monologues you have and which one might match closest to that character you're looking for, mm-hmm. to show the directors or casting agents that you can already sort of do this part. You know, make your appearance kind of match.
If you don't mind, I have a great thing for monologues. Now, there's many different ways to perform, and a lot of times when you're doing monologues, you're in the room with just the people who are casting you and nobody else. But that is not always the case, particularly in theater, because in theater, a lot of times you are in the room with two or three other people auditioning with you, sometimes four or five.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is wise to have three or four monologues prepared.
Absolutely.
One, the nightmare, of course, being that, like, they have that monologue that you've just done. Or they've recently heard it a lot. But what I think one of the best ways to stand out is just to do the opposite. So if you have some very different monologues and you just saw somebody, you know, on the floor pounding their fist, talking about, you know, the Holocaust or something like that, don't do your Holocaust monologue because that was just done.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And there's the direct comparison. It won't be a direct comparison. It will just be that was the same thing. And they'll start lumping people in together. Because you hit a tipping point very fast in learning people's names. If you ever had like a new job or you gone to school for the, you know, first day of school and they take you around like, here's 30 new kids' names. Well, maximize that by 8 hours a day. Because how long do you spend actually auditioning people? That's probably long, actually, is eight. But
well, I mean, for the feature films, we would do 8 hour days.
Yeah.
Seeing hundreds of people a day.
Yeah. Where's your tipping
it's,
point?
It's different, though. I mean, auditioning for film is such a different beast because they're given sides either ahead of time or there.
True.
And each side is a minute or two at best. Whereas, you know, a monologue is going to happen more often in a general call when they're looking for new talent in general. Even if you're auditioning for a play, more likely you're going to come in with sides and prepared work in that end. But even still, you know, there's all kinds of ways to showcase your talent in a way that's reflective of the piece you're auditioning for, to best situate yourself in their eyes as they could do that part. And that's what you're looking for. Even if they don't pick you, if they at least consider you, you're on the right track.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So that said, I mentioned headshots a bit before. And again, when I was interning at this agency, I had a great opportunity to see all the different headshot photographers in Chicago's work because all the headshots came across our desks and I got to see it. I got to hear the casting agents talk about who they liked, who they didn't, and why. So the first thing I would recommend is in your market, get to know the casting directors, get to know people in the industry and get a sense of who is the hot photographer now, whose style is cool, whose isn't, who are they tired of? Because you don't want to be, oh, it's another one of Jack Black's headshots. Oh, it's the same three-quarter thing.
Oddly on the side.
Right.
Jack Black does, you know, professional movies, a star. He tours, of course. He's been to one of our shows recently. And, of course, does, you know, Chicago headshots.
Absolutely. No, but just the idea that, just like you said, Scott, even in an audition setting, the directors can get tuned out. Same thing with the casting directors.
Bored, right?
Yeah, when they say, oh, here's another same look. So you wanna make sure that yours is going to be noticed, but at the same time, you don't want to necessarily be something way outside the norm that no one's going to look at it. So I have just a few brief pointers about headshots I think are useful. The first one is don't break the bank. Too many actors dump thousands of dollars into headshots. Don't. It's dumb. You can always find a good photographer for a decent price. And the biggest reason why it's important, especially is if you're a young actor, is your look will constantly change. Your headshot needs to be a reflection of who you are. So if you dump $1,000 into your headshot at 25, by the time you're 30, you look different. Different enough that they'll go, that's not the person from the headshot. I'm mad. And that's the kind of thought process we're dealing with.
That bothers me a lot. I remember that we talked about that and you're like, yeah, this is Sarah Jackson. And I'm like, I can't even, I'm looking right at the picture. I'm like, I never saw this lady. This is not a late, and a lot of times because like they highlight their eyes so, like their eyes are popping out of their head, they're so glossed over, and maybe Sarah's, you know, in the 180 range, but this headshot's really hiding that weight, which obviously you find out about when you're auditioning. This isn't catfish dating.
Right.
You know, like I'm a bigger guy. I can't do some headshot that makes me look super skinny because I'm not getting the skinny part. They're not going to be like, well, he can look skinny in a photo, so I guess we can hire him for this acting work.
Exactly.
In theater or something.
While on online dating sites, you can misrepresent yourself with your photo.
I know, dating sites.
We all know. We're going to talk about that later, Scott.
Famous mustache collection.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But like, in the headshots.
I've accidentally dated Anessa seven different times.
That's really awkward.
It's really odd. She just keeps going. She's like, meet me in an Italian restaurant. Prepay the meal.
Make the game of it.
And I show up and I'm like, dang it, it's Anessa again.
That's how I get free dinner every week.
Yeah. And she twirls her fake mustache.
I do.
Gallivants out the door. So don't invest. Definitely don't invest more money than you have. Don't go into any sort of debt for this. You know, at the worst, you know, find a student photographer. Find a friend who has a nice camera. There's ways to do it that it showcases you in a professional enough way that it's going to be all right because you'll have to keep taking more of these the longer you stay in the business. Also, you know, the printing of headshots, it's not the same as it used to be. There was a period of time where when you got your headshots done, you would print off hundreds of them and have huge boxes of headshots for all your auditions. But you don't need to do that as much anymore because so much of it is done digitally. You still want to have some ready to go, and you definitely want to take one to every audition you go on. But you don't. That's not your main currency anymore since so many of them are digital.
Yeah.
So don't waste your money on that. As far as just a few main things to avoid, don't do black and white. I know people think it's artistic. It's not. It hides your complexion.
It's so stupid.
What are you hiding? That's the first thing they'll ask. Just do
and it does separate yourself in a dumb way.
Right.
It makes me feel like, oh, good. Somebody from the 1940s is auditioning.
Exactly.
Thank goodness we have that silent film we're working on.
Yes. Exactly.
This person will look great next to Buster Keaton.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the black and white, it doesn't make you look artsy. It makes you either look cheap or it makes you look like you are new to this whole thing and you just watched a lot of old Hollywood movies. And that also goes hand in hand with don't do comp sheets. Oh my God, I can't.
What is a comp sheet?
So a comp sheet, it's an older concept where people were auditioning either for character parts or they're auditioning for commercial roles, and it's a headshot, but it's separated into multiple photos of an actor in several costumes. Yes. So here's Fred as a doctor. Here's
Justin as Batboy.
Right, here's Justin as Batboy. Right, exactly. So we get a variety of looks of this person to show here's what they are in different costumes. But does that show their acting ability? No. That just shows they can wear different clothes, which I assume you being a human being can wear different clothes.
Look, it's Batboy as a fireman.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Right, exactly. So, you know,
it looks weird every time. And that's one of the things that I think is so interesting about it, because every time I've ever seen that, nobody's just doing what would be the most logical thing, where I would love to see, like, Anessa's hair down, Anessa's hair up. That actually holds some amount of value.
Yes.
Like, when you style, or, like, you with a beard, and you currently have, that's your main one, and without a beard, that has value, but it's never that. It's always, I'm a baker.
Right.
I'm a candlestick maker.
I'm an astronaut now. Exactly.
Yeah, me as NASA.
Right, And the thing is, you know, there are modeling comp cards which are valuable, and those do exactly what you were talking about, which show true different looks of the person in different style, which is valuable when it comes to modeling. And it can have some value in theater, but it's just, again, it's not necessary. Again, most directors assume you can cut your hair, or you can put it up, or shave your beard, or whatever.
Yeah, it's never a good look. Although I do think if you're doing I'm blanking on the term now. The video, what do you call it? The demo reel?
Yeah.
If you're doing a demo reel, that can be great to see, like, doing some really different
stuff. Absolutely, yes. Mm-hmm. Demo reel is a time to show off your versatility, not your headshot. Your headshot is when you show you. Your headshot is your business card.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is your business
card. Because you can't remember the people. It's so hard to remember the people. Yep. That's all we do with those. Like, that's what I end up doing with them. That's
who
what
is it?
For. Who is it?
Oh.
One smart thing on headshots I've always heard is wear the color in your headshot. That can go a long way to helping people remember. Oh, yeah. Now, a lot of them, like a lot of the high-end professional things, if you're going really high-end, you know, they're videoing it, and they got like five people in that room, that's probably not going to matter all that much. You certainly don't want to wear the exact outfit from your headshot.
No, don't wear the
outfit. But, like, when you... I've seen a lot of times where they're wearing this, like, they look dazzling in blue and stuff like that, and they come in, like, in a hoodie or something like that, and it's, like, so different that I can't figure out it's the same person.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So then, as far as looks themselves in the headshots, when you do a shoot, you want to do a variety of looks. It's always a good idea to do that, because the way you present yourself for a theatrical audition, a musical theater audition, a dramatic film, commercial, they're different, and you want to show a different side of yourself. And it's definitely advisable to have a wide variety of looks. But again, you're not trying to do characters. So you don't, if you're auditioning for HBO's new Mafia series, you don't dress like a stereotypical mobster, but maybe you wear a nice three-piece suit. So it suggests the idea without pounding the door down. Right.
You know, you're tougher.
You're tough. Right.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of standard looks that people have, you know, your business look for, you know, business style commercials, you know, depending on your age, you know, young parents, middle-aged parents, you know, there's, you know, if you have an athletic build, something that shows off an athletic type for any film, you know, or play the athletes.
You wearing a football jersey and then holding a football.
Or even just, that might be extreme, but even just like something that suggests, you know, working out of some sort. So it's a good idea to have them, to give yourself options. And again, what's nice, now that we are in a digital age where you can email your headshot in for auditions, it's easier to have a wide variety of headshots because you don't have to print them off. What you can do is have your one that you print that's like your, this is my all-purpose headshot. But then you have your wide range of like all being specific ones. So when you send in your audition, you can submit with, here's my standard plus my special look plus my resume for you. And then when you get there, here's just my regular.
Yeah.
And then that way they still can match the face. They know who they're dealing with, but they get that idea.
That's a good tip.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, just again, in general, don't spend too much money. Listen to your market, talk to people around who know who's good, who's not. Because again, another thing is if you go with a headshot photographer that has a reputation, right? They're a big player in your scene. They're going to do things their way. And that doesn't help you. You want a photographer who's going to help you and take pictures that best highlight you.
Yeah.
And if they're focused on themselves, they're not going to care about your needs. And that's not helpful.
Like,
to
I recently had a photographer that said, maybe your best look would be like the back of your head.
Right.
Yeah.
And I get that comment a lot.
Sure. Well, we're, you know, it's understandable.
Justin, what is something that you look for when the audition's actually happening?
Well, specifically for me, you know, I think all the things that people probably learned in an audition class or when they were in college.
Which, to be fair, a lot of people listening didn't have the benefit of going to a incredibly expensive school. You guys paid, I mean, how much for your educations?
More than I care to share. Well, you know, well, anyone that hasn't received that kind of education, I think the basic tenet is, you know, one, that you're, everything that you do, you're being watched from the minute you walk in the door. You know, you got to make sure that you're treating people kindly, you're treating people with respect, and that starts with the person that might be checking you in, giving you an audition form. You know, they are working for that theater company, or they are actors there, and if you're rude to them, or a jerk, or curt, or short, you know, that's going to find its way back to the people that are auditioning. I ask that. I have asked that every year just because I want to make that true. I ask my people in the hall, hey, was anybody a jerk? You know, is anybody rude to you? And there have been a few years where someone was, and it's like, you know, I just crumple their stuff up and throw it in the garbage. So you're being watched. You know, treat everyone kindly, treat everyone with respect, and be on time. You know, if you have a slot, you know, be there. You know, no one cares about your excuse. I mean, it's, what does that already say about you that you couldn't be on time to try to get a job? I mean, just some basic things, you know, that would apply for applying for any job. I think that it's also really important to have a big level of energy, look people in the eye, say thank you at the end of the audition. I'm always impressed, and I appreciate when people come over to the table, say thank you to me, you know, for having them. I mean, they don't have to do it. It doesn't get the job or not get the job, but it's just one more opportunity to see you and hear from you. Hey, thank you. Thank you for letting me audition today. I really appreciate it. And again, like any job, it's okay to ask for the business. It's okay to say thank you, hope to hear from you. Don't ask when you'll hear from them. No one likes that.
Awkward.
You know, just say thanks. You know, it's okay to say thanks and I hope to hear from you. You know, that's okay, but don't ask, you know.
I look for, as I've auditioned a lot more people now, and I've, and some of them are just straight interviews, and this is very vague, but I look for winners now. I don't look for, I note when somebody comes in the room and I'm like, I feel that this person's going somewhere. You know, like the kind of people that can take over a room, the kind of people that introduce themselves to the people next to them, that seem like they're having fun with this. That seem like this is, you know, and you just get that sense from them, from their body language, that like, this is where they're supposed to be.
It's confidence.
It's a lot of the confidence kind of thing. And sometimes it's little things. Like, I just interviewed somebody pretty recently. I know this isn't an audition, but I got the sense that if this person doesn't work for me, they're not going to work for anybody. Does that make sense? And they had like a lot of, like, they had worked really hard to get there. They'd done a lot of things, and they put a pretty good interview, but it was just little things, like the breath wasn't really on point. Their shirt wasn't tucked in like that. You could tell they don't wear shirts like that much where they're and it just wasn't the right look, where other people, like, for example, Chad, we hired in here, and I didn't even have a good job for Chad at the time when we hired him in, and now he's brilliant. But we looked at Chad and we're like, this dude's going someplace. I'd rather him be part of us than not part of us. Does that make sense?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And like, so when you're doing that stuff, like, just go in and own the room. Act like, I mean, half of it's just how long do you want to be with these people? Do you want them to be on set? Will this person embarrass you on set? If you feel like a winner and you just fake it. Just fake that you get a lot of auditions. Just fake that you get no, like, nobody wants this to be your one big break, because nobody would ever want to be part of a club that would have somebody like them as a member. They want to be part of this rising star that's going to go on to dozens of bigger things.
Well, sometimes I think sometimes they just want the job, you know. But
I'm saying the from the other table, like the other side of the table, they want to get something that's going someplace.
Sure.
Well, Adam talked a lot about what, you know, the front half of your, you know, your audition stuff, which is your headshot, you know. But the back of your, I always look at the back of everyone's baseball card, you know, their resume. And I, you know, I call it the back of their baseball card because that's their stats and like where they've been, what they've done. You know, I look at that stuff. I look for that training. And don't list anything like in your special skills that you can't really do.
Oh, no.
You know, because we asked, we had a guy that said he could burp the alphabet or that he's an, and someone was an expert air guitar player. And sometimes when it's been a long day and we're bored, I might ask, and we have asked, show me your air guitar. You know, and you got to be prepared to do that at the top of the hat, but putting interesting things there.
If they nail that, though.
Yeah, if they nail it, it's great. And those things make you stand out, too. You know?
I actually have a Gollum impression on mine.
Nice.
And you go ahead and do it. Now you got to do it.
Yeah, do the Gollum impression.
Sneaker, why does it cry? Filthy hobbitses.
I hired this man.
That's pretty good. And he didn't hesitate, you know.
Right.
The hesitation's what I hate.
Don't lie. And,
right.
Yeah.
Just own it, whatever it is. Own it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one other thing I just wanted to mention that's kind of on the further part of the audition process. And I feel like it's a problem because the way our texting society is now, people have lost the ability to write well and to communicate effectively. Good communication is becoming a lost art, and that's a problem.
And I want to be clear that I have never actually had it, so it's not really an effect of the phone. It's an effect of my whole life.
Right. It's all your fault. It's radiating out from you, infecting the world. But we'll do what we can to stop it. So what I would say is just when someone corresponds with you about your audition, be prompt. Respond quickly. You know, you don't have to like do it that second, but don't wait more than a day. You have reached out to try to get this gig and someone has talked to you about it, responded to you because of your audition or your interest in the audition, whatever it is. You started this process and someone said, okay, we're going to have you in or we're going to bring you to a callback or whatever it is. And you don't respond. Even if your response is, I can't do this now, that's better than nothing. If you give nothing, then you'll never hear from us again. And word travels fast in the small community. If you burn enough bridges, no one will call you.
That's true.
Ever.
Yeah, it's really like two or three and you've hurt yourself enough to need to move.
Pretty quickly, especially in a smaller theater community.
It's really fast. There are actors that ghosting is the worst thing you can do to anybody. I mean, for the most part, not the worst, but you know, like it's the worst way to end a relationship of really any kind. So like, oh, maybe not. Maybe beheading somebody would be worse. But it feels terrible.
It's more final though.
Yeah. you have to be, we have a saying around here and also around Dave Ramsey, which is, I don't get it right a lot. To be unclear is to be unkind.
Yeah.
I got it right.
Yay. You were clear.
I was clear.
I was rooting for you the whole time.
So if you can't do it, just say you can't do it.
Yeah.
Now, I would love to move into some great acting tips. These are immersion theater acting tips.
This is Real News About Fake Things.
We have, again, 30 years here on the mic. Of doing immersion theater, which might be the most amount of any podcast in history for immersion theater. So I'll start with mine, and we're all going to go through one. In doing immersion theater, one of the most important things is to set a tone. Paco Underhill wrote a pretty exhaustive book called Why We Buy, and what he did was he did essentially sociological field research in the world of grocery stores. And for those grocery stores, he would watch people walk in and out and in and out. And he found that people will make their own world within about 10 seconds. And then after that, everything's kind of an interruption. So when people come into your theater show, you need to let them know that it is your world. Which for our shows, we're very, very big into the idea that we need to touch people immediately. We need to set the tone immediately. So when we greet people and it doesn't even make sense. It will be like we're having no reason to greet them. Like we're not functionally doing anything, but I don't want them to stand in line. We'll do line work if like the show, if the doors aren't opening at the time we want, we'll do line work to make sure that they don't make their own world and we're interrupting them. Because if they build their own world here and you don't say, this is our world, this is going to be, you know, you're going to hear our kind of music. You're going to be touched tonight. You know, appropriately on the shoulder, hands, sometimes hugs, depending on the read and the vibe and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I'll sometimes push my finger into a guy's chest as like an aggressive move, but I want to have like a big reaction to every single person that I meet immediately. I either love them or I hate them. I don't want to have like an apathetic reaction to them because I want them to understand that they're a character in this show.
Right.
The world has an apathetic reaction to people. That's what the world does. So my tip for actors in immersion theater is start out by touching them so that people understand, okay, I'm in this world, and then the rest of it is easier. Most people say, well, why didn't this show work? Why didn't this show work? Most of the time, they lost the battle in the first 10, 20 minutes, and they can't recover from that. So I think it's the start that's the most important part of the whole immersion theater experience.
And sometimes when you do that, you actually get some of the audience members doing that too.
Yes.
I did a show just a couple weeks ago where the lady who was playing my mom, by the time that I actually got to interact with her, she immediately ran over and hugged me, like threw her arms around me like we had known each other for literally our whole lives.
Yes.
And this is the first time I had seen this woman today, but she was already so into it that she was like, yes, you are my daughter and I'm going to hug you now because I haven't seen you in 15 years. And it's awesome when they start doing it too.
Yes, when they start doing it, like it's amazing. You're like replicating actors. It's an incredible, incredible experience. Now, Adam, you had a particular tip.
Yeah, I mean, this applies in general to acting, but especially to immersive acting. So in general, people always think acting is the business of doing, but it's not. It's really the business of listening. The most exciting things you can do are how you react to whatever's happening around you. Some of the best moments in movie history are reactions. They're not the doing, it's the reacting. So your scene partners are the audience in this sense. So you have an opportunity here to react to everything that they give you. Some of the most magical moments I've had with audience members have been just that tableside banter, just a turn of phrase. They say a thing and I turn it back around on them, in an amusing way. And you know, they get a laugh out of it, and it's magic because they feel, not only are they a part of this experience, but they're like, this actor person is listening to me and making comedy out of what I'm saying. Like, how cool, how unique.
And shows change. Like, it's more fluid. Immersion theater, experiential theater is more fluid than other kinds of theater. So, yeah. I mean, we're literally, I can't tell you how many times I've had like a host come in or a suspect one come in for their little bit, and they didn't hear that the customer gave away that clue. Like, so sometimes like that just happens. Like, they just stand up and say stuff, they stand up and do stuff, and then the actor comes out and is like, actually I'm his father. Yeah, we already did that. Like, right. And like that shocking reveal literally already happened,
right?
And we have to change that. It has to be ever fluid because we're working with the audience on such a close level, and I think that people find that close level terrifying, but it's not. Because you do this close level of acting all the time. The difference is you're not scripted. You know, when you play along with somebody, they play along back because they're listening.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But that being said, to be fair, listening is hard because my phone is really entertaining.
Yeah, we do battle every the phones, day. But you know,
every day it's more entertaining.
We'll make lots of jokes to get them to put their phone away and shame them in public. So.
Nessa, you had something, a fast tip for you?
Yeah, my biggest thing, my biggest bit of advice is to just be honest to the character rather than trying to do something ridiculous or be funny. Just focus on knowing the information your character would know, respond to the situation and the questions you're getting the way that your character would. Just be honest to who you're playing instead of trying to gear it to be entertaining.
I couldn't agree with that more. Like, Funniness is not just being funny. Like, that's the very first thing, I think, in improv that people fall down. I fell down on that a lot. That's one reason that, like, Gail Mack didn't pick me to be part of Cracking Up, because I was smart, like, I was clever, but I was always just being funny. Like, I was making a joke happen, and I wasn't making a scene or event happen, so everything I was doing was cheap.
Yeah, no one likes to watch someone be funny. They just like to watch something that's funny.
Right.
You know, I think a great example of that is an actor like Will Ferrell, who gets so into his parts, it's borderline ridiculous, but you can tell he believes in it. Like in Anchorman, he believes.
Some of the time, yes.
He believes in the character of Ron Burgundy, and he's owning it, and it's
Elf. That's why it's funny. Elf is, I think, his best example of that. And he's done some movies where he doesn't do that, where he just
Holmes and Watson.
Yeah, he does some. Yeah, he does.
Don't
some,
see it.
Yeah, he does some stuff where, like, it's just trying to be funny because he thinks it's funny too. So he's. I would think he's all over the place. Justin, what about you and your ages of wisdom and Batboy experience?
Well, you know, this is not a lot of acting is done in, you know, subtlety and minutia and maybe an expression of the face, or, you know, this is not that type of acting. You know, this is a very high energy position. You know, this is a very high energy type of role, no matter what you're doing anywhere, whether you're working for us as one of the murder mystery actors, you're a princess, you're a costumed character, you know, this is a high energy thing. And the challenge can be, you know, our day starts when everyone else's day is ending. You know, I'm getting to the show, we're getting there at like 5 or 6 o'clock, you know, that's the end of most people's day. So how do I come in with a high level of energy? And I mean, everyone's going to have a different method to do that, but whatever you do, it has to be at that level. I think this is our first opportunity for sponsorship. I'd like to promote 5-hour energy. I don't know if it's just a placebo effect for me, like if I really needed it this point.
No, 5-hour energy definitely works.
Because I get a good amount of sleep. Yeah. I don't really need it, but I take one before every show just because, one, it just... You know, I'm a creature of habit, and it just lights me up. I mean, I don't get like jacked up on caffeine, but it helps me hyper focus and brings me to a really high level to do the things that, you know, the Adam and Nessa and that you were talking about, to be like focused, to listen, to have that high level of energy, to tune everything out and to just respond quickly. You know, like, it's just, you need to be big without chewing the scenery. You need to be big while still being true to the character.
Yeah. Because you have to differentiate yourself from the suspects themselves, or, you know, actually the customers, which is always interesting, because
you don't want people thinking that, you know, our people are just there.
Yeah. Some of them end up being really good.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I have hired a few actors from shows, which is an insane thing to think about.
Yeah.
To be like, you attended a Broadway show, now you're on Broadway.
Sure. We've had actors who won a Best Actor award at a show and eventually came and auditioned and got hired.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you've got a lot of people to talk to. Like, I've had a couple actors put it on a Fitbit. Like, a well-done murder mystery is like between 3,000 and 4,000 steps from the actor because you've been around the room crisscrossing it, you know, walking holes in the floor, trying to talk to so many people. Even if that amount of people is 30, that's a lot of people to talk to in a small amount of time. Think about being at a party, not at a show. How many people do you really talk to? Like, you have to push yourself,
right? And
to talk to that many people.
Well, that's the key, is it's a marathon. And even in a stage play, there's time that you're off stage or that you're not the focus of the action. From the minute someone walks in the door until you take the final bow, you're going.
You're 3 hours. You're like, the most amount of downtime is the part in immersion theater is the part where it's not immersion theater. Right. Like the act one, act two, act three, where you're only highlighting one or two people. So if you're like the host, you might have a few minutes off. Even if you're the lead, you have like a couple minutes off, because a lot of times you might die. That's my
Zen. You get a break for death.
Yeah, my Zen moment is always... like I always, if I'm dating somebody or something like that, they're always like, they're getting those texts then, and they're like, oh, are you dead?
Right.
I'm like, yeah, I have another 2 minutes.
Yeah. I'll be back to life soon.
I'll be back to life soon.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's nonstop. Yep. And I think a lot of actors get in their head that like, oh, it's investigation time, we get to take a break. And I'm like, that's the part where you're most on.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's what people remember. You know, I think we've talked about it a couple episodes ago, but there's a great book called The Power of Moments. And in that book, one of the things they talk about is if you were to do a scientific survey of Disney, right, and try to do an average of an experience, it would be kind of terrible. So I'll go through it real quick. So, Adam, you have kids now. Mm-hmm. You take your son to Disney. You get up at 8 in the morning to get to the park, right?
Right.
Where would you rate your experience of trying to get your kid up and get him ready for Disney as he's jumping around the room, but you have to wait for your wife to shower?
Mid-range.
Yeah, that's a mid-range experience. Now, you guys go to breakfast. So I call you. That's like a 5 out of 10, right? And now I call you again. It's been another half hour or so. Oh, and you're staying at Disney Park. You just paid $45 for breakfast. How do you feel?
Are there costume characters at breakfast? No. Oh.
No, there's some stuff.
Right? I probably feel worse than 5 at this point.
Yes, because that's a lot. And then you have to take the tram. Now I call you again. You take the tram in. Right. You're waiting in line at the park. You haven't done anything. You've just been waiting in line for like a half an hour. Mm-hmm. And you're sinking money into this as well. And the kid's like, I want to meet Mickey.
Right,
where's
hot.
That experience? Like, you rate that?
We're steadily going down Space Mountain.
Now, yeah. Now, he just met Mickey for the first time. I call you again. Just met Mickey for the first time. And he's jumping around. You got to hug Mickey. You got that picture you wanted. Where's that experience?
No, it's best day ever.
Yeah, and that's best day ever. So it's 10. And we go back and forth through the day, the downs. Then he has that fit. He's crying. Mm-hmm. That's like a 2. And then you go to Space Mountain. That's a 10.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. But because so we rake that day, and I've called you 25 times, and I'm like, you had a 5.7.
Right.
Here at Disney World, right? And ultimately, that's not how you're going to rank it, though, because it doesn't go with that. What you're going to take out is the actual moments that you have, mm-hmm. the most important things that you actually have. So you're going to, a month from now, what are you going to remember? When you met Mickey, right? And then I'm asking you, how was that experience? You're not remembering the tram ride. Right. You're not remembering the $45 breakfast, although you might a little bit.
A little bit.
You're going to be like, that was a 9.5. Because people remember these moments. And the moments that people get from our show, if they're not called on the stage, is investigation time. That's what they got. That's mm-hmm. the time where you get to make those other people feel special. Yeah. And that's one of my biggest things is, if you're not fully on board, racing to those people to give them those moments, then those people never have one.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And immersion theater and experiential theater without moments is worthless. It's you watching other people have fun, which is essentially reality TV at that point in time.
Yep.
Live reality TV. You're like, man, they had a great time on The Bachelor. Mm-hmm. I'm here at my house in Sheboygan, but they look like they're having fun in Italy. Right. I wish I was dating 17 women and they all seemed fine with it. all right, guys. Hey, I want to thank our guests. We have Mr. Adam Mack and Mr. Justin Issa.
Yay!
A couple quick reminders. If you are not part of American Immersion Theater, you're interested in being a princess, superhero, or really a murder mystery actor of any kind, and a true immersioneer, you can go to AIT.careers. That's AIT.careers, and that is also the first time I've ever done that without saying .com afterwards by accident.
I'm really proud. I was waiting
for
it.
Thank you. So we have that. We also have a Facebook group. You can interact with us. You can ask us questions and stuff like that. Scott and Anessa will be back next week. Likely taller is our hope. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping to be taller.
I'm expecting to grow about 3 feet. Yeah.
3 feet.
But can you grow more hair?
Nope. Tried that for a while.
I'm can't grow it out of his head, so he grows height.
We'll grow it for you.
Justin won't. All right. All right. Well, that's it for our episode, everyone. So this is Scott from American Immersion Theater reminding you that theater is a story about others.
American Immersion Theater is a story about you.
Good night.
Bye-bye.